Well, welcome to a second Breakfast with Jesus talk. Now, this one's a bit of an excursion, but it does illustrate the invasive effect of a worldview on a wider society, and that's what we're seeing in Jeremiah. Of course, their society's somewhat foreign to ours. What I found intriguing and rather chilling about what I'm going to talk about today is it's looking at modern society, particularly modern America. Now, mostly we think, and we like to think that Christianity has been good for the world. That, however, is an uneven story, as we all know, and there's a dark side to this influence. Now, last time in my talk, the Harvest and First Fruits talk, I talked about this problem we all have of inclusion and exclusion, dogs Christianity. In Jeremiah's case, the Israel that he was talking to really had this worldview. God was on their side and he was against their enemies, and therefore he would almost bless them no matter what. Jeremiah had a different worldview of Israel's place in the world, which was, rather than two camps, which is a binary view, he had a first fruits and harvest model, which is not a binary view. And this model of the first fruits does play into a cosmic redemption worldview of the plans of God, and of the future that we can declare for all. In other words, we who are the elect and have the Spirit of Christ don't have it instead of others, but on behalf of others, as a foreshadowing of a future reality. In that talk, I mentioned Michael Sandel's book, in which he traces the huge influence of evangelical Christianity on modern America. The book's called The Tyranny of Merit: What's Become of the Common Good. Now, Michael Sandel is a professor of political philosophy at Harvard. And in his second chapter is what I'm going to talk about now. It's entitled Great Because Good: A Brief Moral History of Merit, in which he traces, I think, the implications of the two camps, included and excluded, model. If you've got that model of humanity, that begins to mediate a social model of winners and losers, which he calls meritocracy. In other words, the good rule, the blessed rule. The problem that he's addressing in the book is really the Trump factor, the sense of a huge left behind lower middle class in America. Who are the dark losers in a meritocracy? And in America, it's most evidently seen in the healthcare system, where there isn't a safety net, and he talks at some length about that. But what he says is that the modern economics of America is very much framed by its religious heritage. And at the heart of that religious heritage is how we view merit or blessing. Now, the two camps view, which is there are winners and there are losers, as he said, becomes the basis for a social, has become in America the basis for a social vision. It might now appear to be secular, but it's still, quote unquote, religious. And the within this view, the sort of operating difference between winners and losers is the mechanism of blessing. And winners get blessed because they deserve their wins, and losers deserve their loss. So it's a cause and effect view of the world. It's a meritocracy. And he charts how the prosperity gospel in America is evidence of this moral cause and effect in absolutely chilling fashion. I mean, when you read the examples that he gives, it makes you kind of ashamed. He mentions, for instance, Reverend Franklin Graham declaring that the Hurricane Katrina was divine retribution for the wicked city of New Orleans. When an earthquake claimed more than 200,000 lives in Haiti in 2009, the televangelist Pat Robertson attributed the disaster to a pact that Haitian slaves allegedly made with the devil when they rebelled against France in 1804. You know, very much moral cause and effect has led to social disasters. Sandel is not claiming this is the only religious view of the world, this baked-in cause and effect view of those who are good or faithful get blessed, those who are not get cursed, they're the losers. He sees an alternative in the Bible itself, in the book of Job, which he calls a humble view of life that's more cosmic and accepts that, yes, there are winners and losers, but it's not directly attributable to your moral compass or achievement. I mean, the rain falls in the desert. And in Job's case, it was his comforters who had that cause and effect view. So it's not that he's suggesting that there's something inherently wrong with a religious view. It's a particular religious view that he's critiquing. Now, the story, as he tells it, really crystallizes, it begins with Augustine for sure, but crystallizes around Luther, who said that grace means we cannot work our way to heaven. So when Luther established that, that looks like it's going to really wipe out any meritocracy. What this led to for Calvin and Luther was election. In other words, why do I believe and therefore get saved? Well, I believe and I get saved because I'm elected or predestined. Now, this led to psychological terror, as Sandel said. It's an extremely precarious view. His sentence is, the Calvinist doctrine of predestination created unbearable suspense, and it's not hard to see why. The question becomes, how do I know that I'm in God's elect? And this question has tormented many people, including people that I know. A somewhat answer became, good works for Calvin, you know, are a sign of my salvation. And good works are an outworking of my choice of God. Free will, of course, we know, has come into the picture as well in modern evangelical doctrine. In other words, yes, God's got his predestination, but he also acknowledges free will. And so my free will is what really opens the door for his grace. Now, that quickly makes free will or decisions a work as well. You just keep sliding back into a kind of a merit, into a kind of, I've got something you haven't got, and there's a reason for it. So, and good works and prosperity become a sign of blessing. You know, God helped me sell my house. God healed me. God gave me a good job. God did this, God did that. It's actually what sometimes my friend Mark Strom calls a superstitious view, but it's a view that God blesses me. And it's very much the view that in Jeremiah's day, his opponents had about Israel, that where God's on our side, surely he's going to deliver us. So in America, Sandel traces the way this Calvinist story and evangelicalism has been the buttress of the American modern society, be it secular, be it religious, in which you can easily see how this foundational view of humanity and sociology means that successful people deserve their success. It's somehow a sign of blessing and favour. Even if you're an atheist, you want to think, I'm sort of favoured, I sort of deserve what I've got, that my, you know, my hundreds of millions of dollars. And he's got a terrible sentence where he talks about, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein, in defending his lavish pay in the face of public outrage, replied that he and his fellow bankers were, quote, doing God's work. So you've got in America now a real a mixture of religious meritocracy and secular meritocracy, but they've got common roots. That's what Sandel is arguing. And it moralizes success in this modern world, moralizes success in ways that echo the earlier religious faith. And what this leads to is triumphalism, which is what we began with as one of the really difficult points of, or consequences of the I'm saved, you're not. It's hard for that not to sound triumphalist, because I'm in and you're not in. And that triumphalism is, quite explicit. Sandel says, confident of their election, the spiritual aristocracy of the elect looked down with disdain on those apparently destined for damnation. And he quotes Max Weber, who said, the consciousness of divine grace of the elect and holy was accompanied by an attitude toward the sin of one's neighbour, not of sympathetic understanding based on consciousness of one's own weakness, but instead of hatred and contempt for him as an enemy of God bearing the signs of eternal damnation. A bit extreme, but there's a lot of truth in it. So he climaxes with the view of an American historian, Jackson Lears, who really traces the impact of the of Protestant evangelicalism on America. He says it predominates now America, and he talks about an ethos of fortune versus an ethos of mastery. The ethos of fortune is a Job-type picture of the world. In other words, accepts dimensions of life that go well beyond human understanding and control, and embrace mystery. And it becomes a humble view of life. The cosmos doesn't equally give rewards for merit. It's a mixture. The ethic of mastery, however, puts human choice at the center of spiritual order. And it's hard not to read this and think of the way that really modern evangelical belief says that against predestination, says, well, no, God wants to allow our choice to actually predominate. And so God respects our choice, and if you make the right choice, you're accepted into the church and into heaven, and that's how you get there. But it's hard not to recognize exactly what Jackson Lear says, that this is putting human choice at the center of spiritual order. And then this ethos of mastery and control emerges from within evangelical Protestantism, he says, because God's behind my choice. Now God will bless me. And he says it creates rocket fuel for meritocracy. People get what they deserve. And the two unfortunate outcomes of getting what they deserve are either punishment or hubris. For instance, in terms of punishment, he gives the pretty chilling example after the 9/11 terrorist attack on the World Trade Center in New York City. Reverend Jerry Falwell interpreted the attack as a divine retribution for America's sins. The abortionists have got to, this is quoting what Falwell said, the abortionists have got to bear some burden for this, because God will not be mocked. And when we destroy 40 million little innocent babies, we make God mad. So this idea of punishment for those who are not on God's side, the flip side of that is hubris for those who are. So it's a kind of that's a summary of Michael Sandel's analysis. Of course, what he wants is something to do with the common good. And let's finish by going back to the idea of the Job and Ecclesiastes view of the world, which I think is a cosmic view and a humble view of reality. And if you actually have this view that, look, the rain falls on the just and the unjust, it's all God's good world, one way or another, clearly you're going to have something to do with the quote-unquote common good, i.e. social systems that accommodate the poor, accommodate those who, for whatever reason, it may be that they've contributed to their homelessness, it may not be. It may be that they've contributed to their lack of education, it may not be. But grace has to be shown because we're all in a world with a lot of mystery in it. That view is clearly, I think, going to lead to social systems that are inclusive. I think all of that is authenticated by the paradigm shift in the first fruits model. Because what the first fruits model does, it doesn't divide the world into two camps. It's actually not an alternative to the binary thinking. It's a paradigm shift. It says actually we're all part of the harvest, but some of us are the first fruits. So it's inclusive, but still differentiating. And it's differentiating by where we are on the growth cycle of the seed, as it were. It certainly means that your message and the implication of what you believe cannot be God is on our side, so we're going to win. Is that God's on everyone's side? It's, you know, God's got a broad purpose, and that harvest metaphor is inclusive of all. But the first fruit side of it says it's more about responsibility. You've got whatever you've got, i.e., your gift of the Holy Spirit, your knowledge of the Scriptures, your faith. You've got it on behalf of others and for others. You're there, elected for a purpose. And part of that purpose would be to declare the harvest and bring the harvest forward into the present as much as possible. So it really, I think, the metaphor is implicit in what Sandel said was a wiser view of the world in the Job and Ecclesiastes worldview. The Job and Ecclesiastes worldview, unfortunately, did not come to dominate evangelical Protestantism, and the results, the social shockwaves of that, have proved devastating. So I think these meditations make me think about a really important consequence of cosmic redemption. I'll just end with this thought. I mean, worldviews have an impact on the kind of society we build. And Sandel's analysis, I mean, you may not agree with it, but his analysis says this binary worldview is, even if you fight against it, tends to create a winners and losers meritocracy. But there's something in the cosmic redemption model that is for all people. Actually, I think it accommodates a view of grace, fulsome grace, in a way that the saved, unsaved model really struggles with. It also, I think, accommodates human responsibility nicely. But the social impact is a society that's for all, because God is for all.